This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
The FBI in Peace and War, ordinarily heard at this time throughout the year, is taking its usual summer vacation and will return to CBS 4 weeks from tonight on September 1st.
Broadway's my beat. From Times Square to Columbus Circle. The gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway, it's a promise you make to yourself in some dismal part of your life, or it's a name you say like a curse. It's a place of golden women in mirrors of chrome, or it's a beggar who will tear off a piece of his soul for a cup of coffee. It's anything you want, any time you want it, and it's My Beat. By 9 o'clock, police headquarters had settled down to its nighttime routine. So far, business was slow. I was sitting in my office straightening out the detail sheets that always accumulated on my desk.
Lieutenant Clover, good evening, sir.
Well, Dr. McClure, Dr. Robbie McClure, it's a pleasure to see you. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you. Thank you, Lieutenant.
Hey, what's the matter? What's the matter, Doctor? You look pale.
Well, I could give you all the clinical reasons for the way I look. Now, now, Lieutenant.
Let me get you something, Doctor. I'll
no,
be
no,
right...
No, no, wait, Lieutenant. Last month, there was a shooting. It's not that I want to confess to. It's the thing about... you should know about... Last month, the murder that the police never solved. Daddy, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want that...
Dr. McClure. Dr. McClure. Sergeant Tartaglia.
Yeah, Danny.
Come here.
Yeah. Well, what's the trouble, Danny?
Close the door.
Well, what's all... Danny, what's the matter with Doc McClure?
He's dead.
What?
Flip his coat aside. You'll see why.
Oh, Danny.
From the size of the wound, I'd say it was from a .22 fired from up close. Tartaglia.
Yeah?
Call downstairs and tell him about Dr. McClure. Then get a detail to find out everything you can about the doctor. Friends, relatives, bank account, everything.
Right.
And in the morning, I want the files on every murder that happened about 30 days ago. Unsolved murders. On my desk in the morning.
Right.
Good. I'll see you.
Now, where are you going, Danny?
I'm going to wind back McClure's life. I'm going to find out why he had to die. The great buildings of the city lean against the night in crazy, tilted angles, like lighted toys deserted by a sleepy giant. And there's the feeling that unless you walk carefully, you'll upset their insane balance. But Dr. Robbie McClure's office building was different. It sat square and solid on its haunches, and when you pressed the night buzzer, it growled at you.
Well, sure, my mare, but ain't Danny Clover the Torbert. Canter in, me boy, canter in.
Same old Pippin.
No, not the same, Danny. There are bald spots in me fetlock, and I ain't so quick to break from the starting gate like I used to. From a dashing, mounted policeman to a flabby night watchman. Ah, that's a bitter pasture, Danny, me boy, a bitter pasture.
Maybe you're wrong, Pippet. Maybe it's sweet pasture and you don't know it. Pippet, you know Dr. Robbie McClure, don't you?
Sure, sure I do. A great surgeon. But ah, what a waste, what a waste.
How do you mean?
Sure he was a genius. Should he have been a veterinarian. What else could I mean, Danny?
What else, of course. You know what time he left his office tonight?
I do. I have it right here in my book. Now, will I take a look? Oh, yeah. Here it is. 8:40 in the p.m.
Was he alone?
No. He was in the company of the sleekest, prettiest, raciest-looking filly. It's been my pleasure since I cavorted and devoted police.
Did you have her signature?
Oh, no. She was the doctor's patient. Or guest, or best bet for tomorrow. Night watchmen are discreet, Danny. Some ladies, they don't ask to sign out.
Well, ask them from now on, Pippet.
Huh?
I mean it. Have you got any idea where they went?
No, Danny, but they took a cab from that hack stand out there in front.
Did you see whose cab they took?
Yes, I did. I opened the door for them. They took Irv Newman's cab. If you want Irv, you'll probably find him at his home. I know those hacky skitters, you know.
Well, thanks, Pivot. If you get a lump of sugar in the mail, it's from me.
Oh,
What do you want?
Hey, it's Danny.
Hi, Irv.
Hey, Rose, it's Danny.
Who?
Danny Clover of New York's finest.
Rose, gonna help me wash the dishes already?
Pay no attention to Rose, Danny. She's moody tonight. Come on in.
Thanks, Irv.
Now, sit down, Danny, sit down.
Irv,
I offer you something? A glass of tea, a cold beer? I got it. How about one of Rose's blintzes, huh? Hey, Rose.
Never mind, Irv. Don't bother Rose.
What's the bother? Even if she's moody, she can't rassle you up a blintz.
Oh, I'm here on business, Irv. Some other time.
Oh, business. Hey, Rose.
Huh?
Come here.
Huh?
Shut off Caruso.
Huh?
Make quiet Caruso.
What? You, Caruso?
Caruso. Now we'll talk, Danny. What kind of business brings you down here to Orchard Street, the land of the Knish and the Bagel?
Pippet told me you drove Dr. McClure somewhere tonight, Irv. Where'd you drive him?
Park Avenue. Yeah, here's the address, Danny. I was just making out my records.
Well, thanks. Was he alone?
At first, no. Later, yes.
Translation?
First, he is with a doll. Lean over, Danny. Rose shouldn't hear. A Zoftic-type doll. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Then he is without the doll. Around 50, she opens the door of the hack and slips out into the traffic. McClure tells me to keep going. I think they had an argument.
What about him?
Danny, I'm the type to eavesdrop, especially when they shut that glass panel.
The address Irv Newman gave me was a study in millionaire respectability, Scrub Park Avenue, Brownstone. The butler took my hat and sighed and told me it was all right to go down the corridor into the living room if I tiptoed. I did. Then all of a sudden it hit me, the light from a couple hundred bulbs set in a crystal chandelier. And when I finally squinted through it, I couldn't quite believe it. It wasn't the size of the room. That was only about 100 yards long. It was the walls, from ceiling to floor, and all the way the walls were decked with murals, Mother Goose murals. Paintings of every fairy tale and nursery rhyme character in the book. And on the floor, smack dab between Marjorie Daw and her seesaw and Jack and his beanstalk, sat a man. He was wearing three things, a goatee, a full dress, and a beanie, three propeller type.
Well, hello there.
And a hello to you.
My butler said your name was Danny Clover. But my butler lies. What is your name, sir?
Danny Clover.
You see what I mean? Grab a toy out of the toy box, sir, and sit down.
Mr. Fletcher...
Here, take my latest product. Child psychologists claim it's remarkable for improving the coordination and tactile responses of a four-year-old.
Really? Has it helped you?
Immeasurably. We place the ball in the cup, so.
Uh-huh.
Then we squeeze this lever, so.
Yep.
Then we catch the ball. Oops, we missed.
Oh, I guess we overestimated ourselves. Now, Mr. Fletcher...
Oh, well, call me Fletch. Don't stand on ceremony just because I'm the president.
Oh, does Margaret know?
Huh? Oh, no. I mean the president of the Fletcher Toy Company. I make toys for children, sir. I bring gay bits of sunshine into their otherwise drab little lives. And, as you see, I test my products before I market them. Incidentally, sir, what is your business?
Police?
Police!
Stop here screaming. You'll wake up Snow White over there.
Sir, what right have you to be in my house?
Well, technically none, Mr. Fletcher, but there's a little matter of...
A matter of invasion of privacy. What do you want?
Was Dr. McClure here this evening? Dr. Robin McClure?
In a word, yes.
Why was he here?
I'm his patient. Is that a good medicinal reason?
Simply sterile. Are you a sick man, Mr. Fletcher? You don't look sick.
Dr. McClure says I'm a hypochondriac. But he gives me pills. I take them. They make me feel better. Ergo... I must have been sick before I took the pills.
One more thing, Mr. Fletcher. Who was with Dr. McClure?
I beg your pardon?
Or maybe she stayed in the cab that brought him here. Who was she, Mr. Fletcher?
Oh, that one. Yes. I peeked out the window and saw her waiting in the cab. Oh, beautiful, isn't she? That was striking. One of the most striking women I ever saw.
I blew at the top propeller in Fletcher's beanie, and then the butler came in and ushered me out in the downdraft. Lying must have been one of the little games they played in that million-dollar house. Fletch said the butler lied. Then Fletcher lied about a girl he hadn't seen, a girl who was a question mark or an answer in the murder of Dr. Robbie McClure. If I was going to wind back McClure's life, I needed some sleep. All that got wound up were the sheets in my bed. And in the morning, I started it all over again in the good doctor's office.
You're early. The doctor hasn't come in yet. You'll have to wait.
Everything about her was anonymous. The white shoes, the white stockings, the starched white uniform, the starched white face, and the mouth, scarlet and thin, that she wore like a ribbon of merit.
You're a new patient? Fill out this card, please.
Not a patient. Police. Lieutenant Danny Clover, Broadway Special Detail.
Oh? Did Dr. McClure ask you to come here?
You could say it that way. I'm here to investigate his death.
What? You mean something's happened to him?
He died in my office. He was murdered.
I don't believe.
Oh, I'm sorry you had to be told like that, but we don't always have time to be gentle. You were his nurse, Miss...
Elliot. June Elliot. I have an agglutination test to make on some Rh negative blood, Lieutenant. May I do that while you investigate?
Go right ahead. Where do I find the doctor's patient records?
In that metal file box.
You've been with the doctor long, Miss Elliot?
3 years. Pardon me, Lieutenant. I need that slide.
It's the usual question. Did he have any enemies?
You knew him. What do you think, Lieutenant?
Doesn't matter what I think.
He was a fine man. Generous and kind. I'll need that microscope.
Oh, sorry. This is strange.
In the patient's file? What's strange, Lieutenant?
This card has a name and a date. All the other cards are filled with case histories. All this has is a name and a date. Dorothy Rivers, June 29th. Isn't that strange, Miss Elliot?
The files were the doctor's responsibility. He had his own way of keeping.
Then you don't know anything about a patient named Dorothy Rivers or this date.
Nothing, Lieutenant.
May I take this with me?
You're the police. You do anything you like. I'll have to turn the lights out now, Lieutenant, for the test.
Go ahead, Miss Elliot. Go ahead. This will do for now. And thank you, Miss Elliot.
Goodbye, Lieutenant. Miss Rivers, Miss Dorothy Rivers, Dr. McClure's office. We advise a rest, a long rest in a quiet place.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. If murder should suddenly explode in your face, you'd know how Casey, crime photographer, feels tonight in the drama titled Sellout. That's exactly what happens to Casey. A routine newspaper case suddenly erupts into a savage murder mystery, which requires the sharpest thinking and fastest action of the crime photographer to solve. Crime Photographer is yours for the listening every Thursday evening, as is the other thriller, Escape. Tonight, Escape brings you Leiningen versus the Ants. A top story of harrowing adventure on a top program. Remember Escape and Crime Photographer tonight over most of these same CBS stations. Now, back to Broadway's My Beat.
There's this thing about Broadway. It can tickle you under the chin and make clucking noises, or it can slap your heart across the mouth and laugh. Either way, you get hurt. Right now, the receiving end of the slap was the police department for various and sundry unsolved murders. And the laugh, the big laugh, the cold laugh was that a man named Dr. Robbie McClure had come to my office to die, and I didn't know who'd killed him. I sat at my desk at headquarters tearing the tabloids into a noose of paper dolls when Sergeant Tartaglia opened the door and with a fine Italian flourish lay a thick paper-bound file in front of me.
For you, my lieutenant.
Your memoir, Sergeant? What is it?
Not only what you ask for, a file on one of our more recent unsolved murders.
Get it out of here. Get it out of my sight.
Huh? Hey, Danny, you sick or something?
Oh, all right. All right, leave it.
I also have here in my pocket the dope you wanted on Dr. Robbie McClure. Here, read it.
Talk it to me, son. I'm sick of reading.
There are some interesting items, Danny, about the good doctor. Item. Friends, numerous and friendly, all with alibis. Item. Relatives, none. The doctor was a lonesome man.
Are your wife and kids, Tartaglia?
Oh, great, Danny, just great. Hey, you should see the latest, little Christina.
I bet she's a doll. Go on with the items.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Item. And this is the one I think will interest you, Danny. On June 30th, Dr. Robbie McClure made a deposit in the Corn Exchange Bank in Bronxville. 10,000 crisp, cool, clean dollars.
June 30th, huh? Now you can talk to me about the recent unsolved murder.
As follows. A man named Martin James was murdered in his Sutton Place penthouse apartment at a party night of June 29th.
Yeah?
He was asked to step outside and he was murdered. Martin had a gun. He fired one shot. The bullet from Martin James' gun was never found. We figured it took off across First Avenue.
Tartaglia, there's a doctor's patient card over on the table over there. Tell me what it says on it.
Sure, Danny, sure. Says, Dorothy Rivers, June 29th.
See a name like that on the James guest list?
Wait a minute, Danny. Yeah, here it is, Dan. Dorothy Rivers, in an alphabetical list with a lot of other girls.
Is your address there?
All the girls have the same address.
What? Say that again.
They all have the same address. The Tony Seville Model Agency.
Tartaglia, here's a fin. Buy your doll, Christina, a doll or something.
Oh, thanks, Danny, thanks. But there's something I think you should know.
About Christina?
About Dorothy Rivers. The records say she never showed up at that party. She was never there at all.
Tony Seville paid rent for his model agency in the Empire State Building. For this, he received the privilege of maintaining a 10-room suite on the 40th floor and decorating it with orchids and genuine neutrils. The other decorations were too numerous to mention. Delicate shadings of blonde and brunette. When they crossed their legs, the silk whispered. I started to whisper back, but a scented haze with magenta fingertips beckoned me into an inner office. She closed the door behind her, and all I was left with was a pork barrel in a double-breasted pinstripe named Tony Seville.
My secretary whispered you are a policeman. How have I trespassed? I parked my car incorrectly, perhaps. I forgot to curb my dog.
Let's stop rubbing noses, huh?
I beg your pardon?
Let's put it this way, simple and blunt. There's some questions I want you to answer for me.
You must have a dull profession, asking questions. Very well. Ask a question.
Mr. Seville, your agency supplied a half dozen models to a party at the home of Martin James. Said party a little over a month ago, June 29th. Said home a penthouse on Sutton Place, right?
Possibly right. However, don't underline your details with a sneer. My agency furnishes models as decorative baubles to any social function.
One of your decorations on the evening I'm interested in was named Dorothy Rivers. How do I get in touch with her?
You're a detective. Detect.
What's her address, Seville?
May I suggest a dragnet, detective, or any of the numerous machinations you police are oh so adept at.
Her address, Seville. Where do I find her?
You should be told. We only give a model's address to an approved client. I don't approve of you.
Look, kid, sometimes I can forget I'm a cop. I can forget right now.
I think you mean it.
Yeah, try being cozy for one more second.
I don't know where Dorothy Rivers is. I haven't seen her a month.
You can do better than that.
The day after the party, she phoned. She said she was going on a vacation. She...
You're doing fine, Seville. Keep it up.
There's nothing more. I tried to get in touch with her several times since. She checked out of a hotel. She left no forwarding address.
You're telling the truth, aren't you, Seville?
The truth is this, as far as I know and care. Dorothy Rivers could be dead.
Beginning at the 40th floor, I picked petals off a tired daisy. At the 38th, Dorothy Rivers was dead. 37th, she wasn't dead. 36th, dead. 35th, not dead. I don't remember how it came out, because when I got off at the ground floor and walked into the yellow heat of 34th Street, a character stopped me by tapping me lightly on the leg with the front bumper of his cab. The character was the character named Irv Newman.
Don't look so scared, Danny. Brakes I got. I could stop this cab on a thin latke.
Latke schmatke, so long as I got my health.
You're charming, Danny. Absolutely charming. Hey, told me at headquarters I'd find you around here. I got something for you.
One of Rose's blitzes?
Maybe better than that yet. You know that girl he was asking me about, the one I picked up with Dr. McClure, the professional man?
What about her?
I spotted her for you, Danny.
Where? Tell me where.
So let me tell you. Happens I got a friend, Danny, a truck driver. He's a peach of a fella. His name is Clem. Every morning gives me a push with the truck so I can start this lousy hack.
Where did you spot the girl, Irv?
So I'm telling you. While Clem is pushing me with his truck and I'm gliding along in my hack like in a gondola, I see this girl coming out of building.
What building?
6 West 23rd Street. So I turn around, I wave to Clem. He should stop already. Danny! Danny, didn't let me finish!
Miss Rivers?
Who are you?
I want to talk to you, Miss Rivers.
By what right? I don't know you. Get away from here. Get away.
Let's go inside, Miss Rivers.
Who are you? What do you want?
I'm Danny Clover. I'm a police detective, Miss Rivers. Been through a lot to get to you. We'd get along a lot better if you just settled down.
Why do you want to see me?
I've read somewhere that grief can make a woman even more lovely. You look like you've been grieving.
Don't be clever with me. I'm sick of clever men.
Maybe I can help you.
You, a policeman?
Me, a policeman.
Oh. Well, it's all over now, isn't it, Mr. Clover?
Just about.
You want to know what happened at Martin James' party, isn't that it?
The guest list said you were invited, but you weren't checked off. That mean you weren't there?
I was there. Through the back entrance, Mr. Clover, because he said that was the way it should be done.
Who? What should have been done that way?
Look, Mr. Clover, I'll tell you what happened. I owe it to myself to tell you what happened. I'm tired of pain.
That's it, huh? Blackmail.
Let me tell you from the beginning what happened. Perhaps you'll even believe me.
You'd be surprised, Miss Rivers. Policemen can believe the truth.
Martin James was a man who made investments in all sorts of deals, a kind of silent partner. One of the partners was a man named Fletcher.
Man with a goatee?
He manufactured toys, Mr. Clover. I went to the party with him. Mr. Clover.
What's the matter?
Mr. Clover! The window!
He's gone. Who was it? Who did you see?
I.
Maybe you should have told me his name, Miss Rivers. Now you don't owe anybody anything.
Even as a coroner, I say it's a shame, Danny. Such a beautiful girl. Shame.
Yeah, it's a shame. What I've been waiting for is your report.
Yeah, Dorothy Rivers. Age about 24. Bullet entered left sternum, pierced pericardium. That's the heart, Danny.
Hmm.
Dead on arrival.
Dead all?
This girl was shot once before. She's got a healing wound that... Well, it looks mighty like a bullet wound. It's right here, Danny.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes it all add up. That makes it add up just fine, Coroner. Neat. Real, real neat. Hello, Fletcher. There's a friend, Fletcher. The payoff goes on just the same. Tonight, kid, 9:00. So long, Fletcher. It took me 10 minutes to get to the Park Avenue palace that Fletcher had built out of psychological toys for kids. Across the street, I took a plant behind a fat, uniformed doorman who kept looking at me out of the corner of his fat eyes as if he were terribly sorry a thing like me had ever happened under his gilt-fringed canopy. At 8:30, the lights in Fletcher's crystal chandelier began to go out in sections. In 5 minutes, he was on the street, hailing a cab. I tossed a nickel to my fat doorman, hailed a cab of my own, and tailed Fletcher to an office building I'd been in once before. I watched him slip Pippet a bill and then walk down the corridor to a self-service elevator. I thought it'd be nice if he had company on his lonesome ride. He didn't.
Police! Why am I constantly surrounded by police?
Maybe because you bring sunshine into my drab life, Fletcher. You know how to work this thing?
Well, of course. It's nothing but a toy.
Allow me anyway. It's the fourth floor you want, isn't it?
Well, no, not at all.
Humor me, Fletcher. Let's make it 4. Right down this hall, 438, Dr. McClure's office. That's where you want to go, isn't it, Mr. Fletcher?
There are obviously some titillating gyrations going on in that mechanical policeman's brain of yours. You will reveal them to me, please?
I was waiting for you to ask me that in just that way. Here we are. After you, Mr. Fletcher.
Oh, thank you.
Now I reveal the payoff money, Fletcher. Give it to me.
Ah, of course. I see. I thought it was curious that I should have to keep paying blackmail to a dead man. Dr. McClure is dead, isn't he?
The money, Mr. Fletcher. It's hard for me to say please.
Well, here you are. $1,000. You want it weekly, I presume, just as I paid it before?
That's cheap, isn't it, Fletcher, to buy off the electric chair? It's quite a toy, too, I hear.
Yes, quite. Then you know, of course, that Dorothy Rivers and I murdered Martin James.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he deserved it, you know. He swindled me out of a good deal of money.
What was Dorothy Rivers to you?
Now, you're talking like a policeman again. Dorothy Rivers was a toy, expensive and fragile. It made her all the more desirable. That and the fact that I could make her do anything I liked.
Could you bring her back to life?
What?
Hey.
No, don't get up, gentlemen. As long as I was eavesdropping, it makes me less of a lady.
That gun's not becoming either, Nurse Elliot.
Put it away, my dear. Toys like that make me nervous.
I prefer this pose. Now, what were you saying, Lieutenant?
Now that you're here, I've got even more to say.
As a nurse, I'm a humanitarian, Lieutenant. You've got a minute more saying time.
A man should never lie under the circumstances, huh? And if I told you this, if I told you that you were the blackmailer instead of Dr. McClure, what would you say?
I'd say you were telling the truth.
What? Then I've been paying all that money to this temper,
Mr. Fletcher. Well,
Dr. McClure took the initial $10,000, all right, but the nurse here kept right on blackmailing you and Miss Rivers in the doctor's name. McClure found out, so he had to die.
All through, Lieutenant.
Not quite, nurse. After the blackmail, you had to kill Miss Rivers because she was about to talk to me.
Now, Lieutenant.
One more thing. If you kill me, the payoff stops. Consider it, Miss Elliot. I got $1,000 in my pocket. Half yours, half mine. It could go on and on. We could still make Fletcher pay. Think about it, Miss Elliot.
Put the money on the table, Lieutenant. Half yours, half mine.
All right. On the table.
Thanks. I'll take mine, Lieutenant. Now.
Yeah, now, Nurse Elliot.
I'll kill you!
Fletcher, nurse. Drop it. Drop the gun. Yeah, thanks.
I'll lift it up for you, Lieutenant. I'll get the gun.
Lift this, Fletcher. Got any smelling salts for Fletcher, nurse? It took 3 police officers to carry Nurse Elliot away. She tore at their faces and screamed in a language she hadn't picked up in medical books. Fletcher? He was different. He settled himself in the Black Maria, pulled out a solid gold yo-yo and played with it all the way down to headquarters. Broadway's happy now. It's got on the carnival clothes it wears every night, and the midway boils with roustabouts and yokels and hurdy-gurdy sounds. It's a jack-in-the-box, and it's a clown. It's a shining girl on horseback, or it's a geek with no arms, no legs, and no heart. It's Broadway. The gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes, with script by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. Musical direction is by Lud Gluskin. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for Broadway's My Beat. America can be proud. America is proud of the young men of our armed forces. Painstakingly trained as specialists in many fields, these servicemen will be the leaders in tomorrow's civilian life. Educational advantages open to today's servicemen are unparalleled if you can qualify. Look into the volunteer enlistment program now. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Sometimes a sucker wins. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Sometimes a sucker wins. The very exciting story of a girl who finds the key to her brother's disappearance and opens the door to murder. Let's take a look at it under the reading lamp. When Joan Adams arrived in the city, she felt uneasy, apprehensive. But the thought of turning back never occurred to her. She had a job to do, one that would require courage and patience. As soon as she'd obtained a room, she phoned District Attorney Nelson.
District Attorney Nelson was a busy man. At least that's what his secretary told me every time I phoned. But I kept calling, and finally she gave me an appointment. When I arrived there, Nelson made me wait almost an hour. Then his secretary ushered me into his office. For a few minutes, he pretended to be busy with the papers on his desk. Then he looked up at me.
Now, Miss Adams, what did you want to see me about?
My brother, Larry.
Oh, you read the papers, didn't you?
Yes, I read them.
Well?
The story they printed is a lie.
I'm sorry, Miss Adams. I'm afraid I disagree with you.
Look, Mr. Nelson, I've come all the way down here from Hillsborough because I think my brother is dead. I believe he was murdered.
I see. And what makes you so sure he was murdered?
I just know it, that's all.
Oh, the feminine intuition test, eh?
No, it's much more than that. I knew my brother better than anyone else in the world. He would never run away from anything. And he would never steal.
No? Look, Miss Adams, your brother was my assistant in charge of an investigation into the building racket. Certain important files were in his care. One day, without a word to anyone, he disappears with the files and with every dollar he has in the bank. Doesn't that sound like a payoff to you?
No, Larry couldn't be bribed. He just couldn't.
I wish I could share your faith in your brother, Miss Adams, but I'm afraid the facts speak for themselves.
Well, then, you won't help me?
Help you? I should say not. Due to your brother's malfeasance, the integrity of this office has been impugned.
I see. And if you get involved with me, it might hurt your chances for political advancement.
How dare you insinuate such a thing? I'm here to represent the citizens of this city. The only
thing. Oh, why don't you stop? What? Save that bilge for your campaign speeches.
Why, I... Young lady, please leave this office at once.
Don't worry, I'm leaving. But let me tell you this. I'm going to clear my brother's name if it's the last thing I do. When I walked out of the building, I turned right and went to the corner to get a bus back to my room. As I stood there, I noticed a green coupe parked behind the bus sign. There was a man at the wheel. As I looked in his direction, he pulled his hat brim low over his eyes and slouched down in his seat. Then the bus came along. I got in, sat down in the rear. After we started, I happened to glance out the rear window. I saw that green coupe pull slowly away from the curb. Just when I began to feel sure I was being followed, the coupe turned off the avenue on which we were traveling. When the bus stopped at my corner, I got off and began walking across the street to my rooming house. I was about halfway over when I heard the motor. I looked around just in time to see the car.
Are you all right, miss?
Yes, I guess so.
Gee, that sure was a close shave.
Yeah, sure was. I told myself it was an accident. But the car that almost ran me down was a green coupe. When I got up to my room, I was frightened and discouraged. I had only one clue. A month before, in a gossip column syndicated in the Hillsborough paper, Larry had been linked with Roxy Haver, the burlesque queen. When I'd written him about it, he'd laughed it off. I looked up Roxy Haver's number in the directory, and then I called her.
Hello?
Hello, Miss Haver?
Yeah.
This is Joan Adams.
Who?
Joan Adams, Larry's sister. You remember my brother, don't you?
Well, yeah. I guess everybody does.
But I mean, you knew him.
Me? Whatever gave you that idea?
Well, I read about it in Guy Gilmore's column, you know, about a month ago.
Oh, that. That was just some publicity dreamed up by my press agent.
But Larry wrote me it was true.
Now, look, honey, maybe he did, but he was just stringing you. If I had a buck for every guy who claimed he went out with me, I'd have picked up more dough than Stymie.
I know,
sorry,
but...
honey. I gotta hang up now.
Wait.
Yeah?
Miss Haver, you're the only lead I have. I've got to see you.
Huh?
I'm coming down to your hotel right now.
Your what? Say, don't you understand English? I told you, I never knew your brother.
I said I'm coming right down.
Wait a minute. I'll see you. You know where the Market Street subway station is, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, I'll meet you there in half an hour. I'll be near the newsstand at the rear of the platform.
Right. Goodbye. Miss Haver?
Yeah. Keep your voice down, kid, and face the tracks.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I just want to keep my nose clean, that's all. Now, what do you want?
You did know Larry, didn't you?
Yeah, he went out with me a couple of times.
Why?
Huh?
Oh, no, please don't misunderstand. You see, I know Larry didn't like making the rounds, nightclubs and things like that. He was on a job, wasn't he?
Search me. All he told me was that he liked my company.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Then why did you deny knowing him?
Look, honey, I gotta watch my steps, see? Publicity's okay, but not in a caper like this.
Oh. I don't know. I was... so sure you could help me.
Uh-huh, I understand. Listen, honey, I'm going to give you a good tip.
Yes.
Go on home and forget about this mess.
Well, it's easy for you to say. He wasn't your brother.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going to keep digging till I get the truth.
Okay, honey, do what you want. Only don't call me, and whatever you do, don't come near my hotel. So long, kid.
I watched Roxy go up the subway steps. I turned and walked to the front of the platform to wait for a train.
All right, everybody, take it easy. Keep back. Keep back, will you?
The platform was crowded and everyone surged forward. Then just when the train was coming into the station, someone in the rear pushed me.
Hey, what's the matter with you, miss? You trying to get yourself killed?
Someone pushed me.
Huh? Who?
I don't know.
You don't know, eh? If you ask me, I think you were trying to jump, but you lost your nerve.
Trying to... Oh, you're crazy.
Not me, sister. Now, come on, beat it before I call a cop. Come on, get going.
That subway guard didn't know it, but he'd given me an idea. I went down to police headquarters. When I told the desk sergeant my name, he sent me in to a Lieutenant Calvin. Calvin listened to my story in silence. His eyes were cold, skeptical.
That's quite a story, Miss Adams.
But it's true, every word of it.
I'm not saying it isn't. But even assuming the facts, there's the possibility that both incidents were accidental.
No, but I tell you, they couldn't have been accidents. Someone is trying to prevent me from finding out what really happened to my brother.
I know what happened to him.
You do?
Yeah. You see, you were sent to me because I'm in charge of the Larry Adams case. Your brother was paid off, and now he's hiding out.
You too, huh?
Yeah, me too. I'm convinced of it.
Of course. You couldn't possibly be wrong, could you?
No. Miss Adams, I'll let you in on a little secret. Reports in that your brother's been seen in Mexico.
I don't believe it. If Larry were alive, he'd communicate with me in some way.
Not if he were wanted.
I tell you, he would.
Have it your own way. You know, Miss Adams, you've been annoying quite a few officials by poking around in this matter. I thought I'd put you wise so you wouldn't waste your time.
I'm not wasting my time. I'm determined to clear my brother's name.
Maybe so. But if you're smart, you'll catch the next train home.
That sounds like a warning, Lieutenant.
It is. You see, I'd hate to see a pretty girl like you get hurt.
After seeing Lieutenant Calvin, I was more determined than ever to vindicate my brother. Calvin had done nothing to encourage me, except in one way. I was annoying people with my poking around. Perhaps I'd annoy the right person. A few days later, I got a telephone call. Hello?
Hello, is this Joan Adams?
Yes. Who is this?
Never mind. I understand you want to know something about your brother.
Yes?
I know something, baby. Hello, you still there?
Yes, I'm here. It's just that I... What did you want to tell me?
Not so fast, baby. I don't talk on the phone.
Oh, well, where can I see you?
There's a little place called the Blue Swan at South and Main. Meet me there tonight at 7:30. I know what you look like. Just sit in the booth and wait, okay?
Yes.
Just one little thing. I don't want any other company.
What do you mean?
Don't invite any cops. I don't like them.
Don't worry. Neither do I.
Good. Okay, see you tonight.
Hello, Miss Adams.
Oh.
What's the matter, baby?
Nothing. I didn't see you come in.
No? I was in the back watching you. Come along?
Yes.
I hope so. I thought I saw a guy hanging around outside.
I swear I haven't spoken to the police.
Yeah. You know, with those big blue eyes of yours, you could make me believe anything.
Shall we talk?
Okay. The name's Griffo.
Griffo?
Yeah. Don't mean nothing to you, huh? Ever hear of Augie Strecker?
I think so. I've seen his name mentioned in the papers.
Uh-huh. Every time something happens that ain't kosher, the papers like to hint maybe Augie has something to do with it. You know what? He has.
Did he have anything to do with my brother's disappearance?
Oh, that's asking a lot, baby. You see, I work for Augie.
Oh.
But don't get me wrong. Sometimes when you work, you ain't satisfied with your pay.
I see. Well, I have some money, not much, but maybe I could...
Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
You sure you didn't tip off the cops?
Yes, why?
I thought I saw that guy again through the window.
I don't see anybody.
Well, maybe not, baby. You know, talking to you ain't exactly healthy for a lot of reasons. I don't like it here.
Where can we go?
I don't know. We can't go to my place. I live at one of Augie's hotels. Cops keeping tab on you where you live?
I don't think so, but...
But what?
Nothing. I want to hear about my brother.
Okay. I got my car outside. Let's go over to your place.
All right. We got into Griffo's car and started off. He didn't say anything, just drove rapidly, doubling on our tracks until at last we reached my rooming house. Griffo was silent till the door of my room closed behind me.
Yeah. Now maybe we'll be alone.
What are you looking for?
Just checking to see that you haven't planted a listening device or two.
Well?
Okay, you're clean. Mind if I sit on this sofa with you?
No.
Thanks. I'll just put this heater on the coffee table. You know, just in case.
Do you always carry a gun?
Yeah, it comes in handy. Well, let's talk. You were saying that you haven't got much dough.
No, I haven't. Just about $800.
At all?
Yes, but maybe I could raise some more.
How much?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to have time.
That's not so good. Anybody ever tell you you're a looker?
No.
Cut it out. You don't have to play cute with me. Come here.
Oh, please.
You know, baby, money ain't everything. Now, maybe we can work this out.
No, please. I'll get the money.
Forget the dough. Now, come on, baby. You don't want to play hard to get, do you?
I said don't.
All right. Give me that gun.
Oh,
Give it to me.
It was only after he fell that I felt the gun in my hand. I stared at it, and then I dropped it. I sat watching the red stain on Griffo's shirt. I don't know how long I sat there. Suddenly there was a knock on the door. I stood, but I couldn't walk. Then the door opened. A man came in. Big man with a hawk-like face. It was only when he closed the door, I noticed he held a gun. He looked at Griffo and at me. Then he put away his gun.
I see you beat me to the punch, Miss Adams.
Who are you?
I'm Strecker, Augie Strecker. Oh, you poor kid. Guess you never killed anybody before, did you? Well, you did a good job. You know, I want to thank you.
Thank me?
Yeah. For Griffo here. He saved me the bother.
I didn't mean to kill him.
No? He's dead.
I was fighting with him. The gun went off.
I see. Look, I know a little about murder. Better make up a better story. That one will sound phony to a jury.
A jury?
Sure. They try you for shooting people. Remember? Now, this thing looks bad. You invite a man up to your room, someone you think had something to do with your brother.
How did you know that?
Well, it's my business to know everything. Anyway, as I was telling you, you're up here with a guy you think can help you. You threaten him with a gun. He doesn't talk. You kill him. Yeah. Looks bad.
But that isn't what happened.
Sure, I know. But who's going to believe you?
What should I do?
Well, you did me a favor knocking him off. I'll help you get rid of the body and get you out of town.
No, but shouldn't I report this?
Okay. Do it your way. So long.
Wait.
What do you want?
Help me. Help me get rid of him. I packed my suitcases and carried them down to Griffo's car. I brought back a lap robe. Then I returned to the car and sat in the front seat. Soon I saw Strecker in the vestibule, carrying a dark bundle. He came out hurriedly, crossed the sidewalk, and opened the rear door of the car. He put the body in. The legs dangled. And he tucked them in, covered Griffo with the robe, and leaned the suitcases against him. He slammed the door shut, got in alongside of me. And we drove off.
You come from Hillsborough, don't you?
Yes.
I'll drive you to the Westbridge station. We just about make the 923.
What? What are you going to do with Griffo?
Oh, don't worry about that. I always take good care of anybody who tries to double-cross me. Oh, by the way, Miss Adams, I'm buying you a one-way ticket to your hometown. Understand?
Yes.
Good. Something tells me you've got a lot more sense than poor Griffo.
Strecker handled the wheel with a reckless disregard of traffic lights and a contempt for other drivers. There was one moment when I thought the car would overturn. It was at the railway crossing when we swerved to avoid hitting the gateman. When we reached the station, Strecker stopped the car, well out of the range of the lights there. Then he got out.
You wait here, I'll get your ticket.
All right. Please hurry back.
Okay. Take it easy.
He glanced in the rear of the car and then walked to the station. I felt like jumping out of the car and running. But I remembered what Strecker had said. And the way he looked when he said it. Then I heard footsteps approaching. I was glad to hear them. They stopped at the car, and I looked up.
Hello, Miss Adams.
It was Lieutenant Calvin. He was standing there with his hand on the window watching me. And he looked into the rear of the car.
Leaving town?
Yes.
Kind of sudden, isn't it?
I guess so.
You know, I went over to your house to see you. From what I saw there, I gathered you were leaving us.
I didn't have much time to pack. I wanted to make the train.
I see. I figured you'd be taking this one. I tore out here in a prowl car to catch you. Just about made it, didn't I?
Yes. What do you want?
Well, it's about your brother.
My brother?
Yeah. Remember that report I mentioned about his having been seen in Mexico? Well, they checked on it, and it's not true. Just one of those things.
Oh.
What's the matter? I thought I'd be in for at least a strong I told you so.
No. As a matter of fact, Lieutenant, I've decided that you were right.
You have?
Yes, I guess I've just been foolish about things. And that's why I'm going home.
I'm sorry you're leaving.
Anything wrong, Miss Adams?
What? No, Mr. Strecker, not at all.
Hello, Augie.
Hello.
I didn't expect to find you here.
No? Here's your ticket, Miss Adams.
Thank you.
Was there anything you wanted, Lieutenant?
No, Augie. Not right now.
And suppose you leave us alone.
Okay. I'll be seeing you. Oh, and maybe you too, Miss Adams. So long.
Calvin began walking away. And then he stopped. He looked at the rear of the car and started to walk back.
Strecker.
Yeah?
Your taillight is out. If I were you, I'd have it fixed. I wouldn't want to have to pull you in, you know.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
From a distance, I finally heard Lieutenant Calvin drive off. I was still shaking. It was the sound of the train arriving that steadied me a little. Strecker got my suitcases out of the car.
Well, Miss Adams, I guess you better get moving.
May I have my bags, please?
Don't you want me to carry them for you?
No, thanks. I'd rather not.
Okay. Goodbye, Miss Adams.
I didn't answer him. I just took my suitcases and walked to the train. I could feel Strecker's eyes watching me until I got on. I found a seat next to a woman. It was on the side facing the station. I kept my head down till the train started. Then I looked out of the window. The car was gone.
Are you feeling all right, miss?
What?
I said, are you all right? You know, you look kind of shaky.
No, I'm fine. I'm just a bit tired.
Oh, gone far?
Hillsboro.
I hear that's a nice little town.
Yes, it's nice.
I like small towns. It's much better than living in the city, I always say. It's more neighborly. Don't you think so?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Oh, that's all right. I know how it is. Sometimes a person doesn't feel like saying a word. Perhaps you'd like to read. Wait, I have a book. Here it is.
Don't bother.
Oh, nonsense. It's no bother. Go ahead, take it. It's awfully interesting. It's about a murder. What? Why, what's the matter? Where are you going?
I got up and walked unsteadily down the car. The wheels of the train must have been listening to what that woman said, because they repeated it.
A murder.
I couldn't breathe. And suddenly the wheel screamed. The train shuddered and flung me to the floor. My head hit the top of the seat. And I was lost in darkness. When I opened my eyes, I had to close them again. The light was too bright. And I thought I'd seen a face very close. face which didn't belong there. I waited a while, and then I slowly opened my eyes again. A man was bending over me. It was Lieutenant Calvin.
Take it easy, Miss Adams.
Where am I?
In a hospital. But don't worry. The doctors assure me you're all right. You may have a bump where you struck your head, but it's nothing serious.
The train. Well, what happened?
Well, there was a collision. You were knocked unconscious and brought back here.
I can't stay here. I've got to leave town right away.
I'm afraid that's impossible for the time being.
Why? You said yourself I was all right.
Oh, it's not that, Miss Adams. You see, the train you were on collided with a car.
A car?
Yeah. A car driven by Strucker.
Strucker? He couldn't have disposed of Griffo's body. There wasn't time. Calvin was staring at me with his cold eyes.
You see, Miss Adams, on his way back from the station where the road cuts across the tracks, Strucker tried to beat the train to the crossing. He lost. Tell me, do you feel well enough to get out of bed and get dressed?
Yes.
Okay. I'll be waiting for you outside in the corridor.
It didn't take me very long, considering everything. When I came out into the hall, I guess I swayed a little. Lieutenant Calvin reached out to take my arm, but I shook him off. Well, where do we go from here? To headquarters?
Nah, we won't have to go that far. You just have to cross the hall into that room. A friend of yours is in there.
I walked slowly to the door and opened it. There was a screen around the bed. I entered the room, closed the door. It seemed years before I walked behind that screen.
What do you say, baby?
Griffo!
Yeah, it's me in person. I'm a hard guy to kill, ain't I? Now look, baby, I haven't much time. I want you to listen.
Yes?
Up in your room. I was talking to you about your brother.
Yes?
Strecker had him bumped off. Augie had Roxy Haver get in touch with him. She played it like she was a stoolie with info to sell. I told him to keep it quiet. Your brother was a sucker for it. He's in the river, near the bridge.
Did you tell this to the police?
No. But don't worry, baby, they're listening now.
He made a gesture with his head, and I saw the wire along the wall. There was a listening device in the room.
I don't care this time.
Is Strecker dead?
Yeah. He always was a lousy driver. I told him to let me take the wheel.
But how could you? With that bullet in you.
Bullet? That's good. That's a hot one. I thought you were wise by now.
Wise?
Yeah. It was like the green coupe and that subway job. You see, up in your room, we gave a performance. Blank cartridge and a red stain. To bluff a sucker out of the game. But you know, baby, sometimes a sucker wins.
And so closes tonight's story, Sometimes a Sucker Wins. James Irvine wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Joan Tompkins played the part of Joan. The cast included Sidney Smith, Larry Haynes, Arthur Vinton, Cameron Purdom, and Anne Loring. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. This is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good, we have the very intriguing story of a fish that told a story of murder. It's called Fish for Entree. In the meantime,
Well, in the meantime, there's a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.